Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us this day is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well, and good to have you with us. You know, I guess the most natural thing in the news right now that we need to at least acknowledge there is an event. Not that I fully understand the meaning of it or what's going to happen and how people are going to interpret it. And that, of course, is the election last night. It sort of surprised me. It looks like, you know, the Democrats are going to gain two seats. And I keep thinking, you know, you know, on the presidential election, could they elect a guy like Biden? Really? Looks like they're going to. Maybe they had to cheat a bit, but we end up, it looks like he will. We'll find out a little bit more about that today and tomorrow, but it looks like he will. But then when you think about the two candidates running for the Senate and think, well, under these circumstances of what's going on in the country, you'd think, are we that far along that people are going to choose those? Not that, you know, the other two candidates come down on our side on all the issues or many of the issues, because I'm sure the four of them that were running, I'll bet their support for the military-industrial complex may be very similar. And that's a different story, but it's a significant story, though, too. But anyway, it looks like there'll be two new Democratic senators, and then they were going to control the Senate. It may not happen, but maybe we'll know later in the day. But that, to me, is a big event. And thinking about the economy and the budget and the lockdowns and the mess we have, I thought, well, this is really, really a bad news from somebody who might say at least or lean toward less government, that this would be a negative and that there will be a negative reaction on the stock market. Well, last I looked, the Dow was over 500 and gold was down $40, and everybody seems to be happy, at least satisfied. They haven't panicked over it, so they don't see it as bad news. But I recall very clearly in August 15th was the day that they closed the gold window. It was a Sunday, so I was anxiously waiting for the markets to open on August 16th of that year. And the Chamber of Commerce came out and said this was the greatest thing in the world, and we needed tariffs, and we needed taxes, and on, and the price controls. And I thought, boy, that is really bad news. But the market that day went up a historic high. It never had gone up that much in one day before. And I thought, holy man, boy, do I miss it. But the truth was in the timing, because that was the immediate reaction, and yet the 70s were a disaster for the economy. So that whole process we suffered from, and we continue to suffer from, by the way. But today is another one of those days that I just realized I don't need to be in that hourly trading business of every hour buying and selling, because my interpretations would be you know, a little bit different than what's happening. But anyway, they've survived this. It looks like the Democrats are a real winner. There's other various winners that we could say are going to benefit by this. But right now, I don't see anybody who are the real winners. The real losers over all this are the ones who have been losing going into this election period, because there's been too much support for big government, and the people lose inadvertently because they don't realize how bad things are, and they think the government can just solve the problem with more spending. So, but long term, the nastiness that goes on and the complaints that I have in particular, and that you, Daniel, have pointed out so often, ultimately, long term, whether it's foreign policy, monetary policy, spending policy, it's the people that ultimately pay the price. And I think the worst thing that happens is they pay their price in the sacrifice of liberty.
Yes, indeed, Dr. Paul. 50-50 is the final tally. Now it looks like that the two Democrats from Georgia won, and probably a foregone conclusion. They did the same thing they did with regard to mailed ballots and drop your ballots off where you wish, that sort of thing for the president. However, if you do analyze the vote numbers, the turnout was about 300,000 votes less for the two Senate candidates than it was for President Trump. So that means a lot of Republicans did stay home. Were they sick of the whole process? Who knows? Were they unhappy with the candidates? Who knows? But certainly it looks like it now. You know, Paul Sperry, who's a pretty good investigative reporter, he was reporting earlier today that the same shenanigans were going on again, that at midnight they stopped counting the votes. When the two Republicans were ahead, and then around 2 o'clock, they resumed counting, and magically the two Democrats are ahead. Did it happen? Who knows? You know, there's enough questions in this process that you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to think that something smells. Unfortunately, for those of us who think that divided government is better government, it's probably not a great thing. Although on the other hand, someone did point out today, Dr. Paul, that Vice President Harris is going to be on a pretty tight leash. She's going to be essentially the 101st senator, and she's going to have to be hanging around Washington all the time, at least while she remains vice president until she goes forward, having to do those tiebreaker votes. So maybe there's a silver lining in that.
Yes. You know, I want to mention a couple other things that, has changed and who may be suffering from this. I would say maybe victorious. I think one of the victors in this is social media. I think they win big because there's a lot of frustration out there in the way they control, and in the mainstream media as well. You know, as far as, you know, conservatives or libertarian getting their message, that's a lot more difficult. And therefore, they come out looking good because it's very clear on whose side they were on. And there was also the coalition of big business and the voter and the way these campaigns went with the Biden Democrats. The Biden Democrats are in solid, and that challenges the free market people. Big business benefits from this. The military industrial complex benefits from this, and they're very much in charge. The principle of corporatism benefits from this, and this whole thing that Republicans are free market people, and you have the Democrats are pure socialists. I don't think it's quite that simple. I think socialism is precise, and I don't think we have that. We have something equally bad. We have corporatism, and we have inflationism, and we have the Federal Reserve in charge. But the coalitions I allude to here are people who are very, very much in touch with the deep state, and that's really the most important thing. They control media, and they control the budgets and all these other things. So it's been a big benefit for those who are advocating less government and constitutional government and reducing the size and scope of government. Right now, I think there was a setback for that group of people.
Yeah, I think, looking at the Republican Party, when Trump essentially took over when he was elected in 2016, it really was a party devoid of ideas. And for better or worse, probably a mix of both, President Trump did put a stamp of identification on the party, and a lot of it was populism. He identified with working class people in the Rust Belt, and that enabled him to get elected. But the party itself, of course, was divided, with a good deal of the party against and opposed to Trump. A lot of it was stylistic, I guess, perhaps. But the GOP really didn't go anywhere from 16 on. So the idea that somehow being divided in its view toward Trump would somehow go ahead, when really, Dr. Paul, what does it stand for? You're right, you talked about socialism. Endlessly hearing GOP politicians going on and on about socialism. Meanwhile, they're voting yes on these massive spending. They're voting yes on massive increases in military spending, free money overseas for foreign countries. So it really rings hollow. I think the problem, Dr. Paul, is that there's an absolute intellectual and philosophical void in the Republican Party with or without Trump, and people just aren't going to get excited about it.
Well, you know, another thing as a consequence of what happened last night is that I think the people who like lockdown and really promote it, they're looking forward to next year. There's another virus coming. And I think two people have it so far. So, and this is not to say there's not problems out there, but the way they use it politically is. So if you happen to be on the side of saying, like a lot of people in Florida, this lockdown business is extreme, and it's harmful, and it's more deadly than the virus itself. I think the people who argue for more lockdown They had a great victory last night because people voted in that way, and the people who would say less of it is what we should be working for. Also, I think it's a victory for street violence. There has been a lot of street violence, and I would think that should have been one of the big key issues. I think it did become an issue in the smaller races, in the congressional races. They must have been able to get that message out because those who were opposed to the lockdown and all, they did better at the local level. But on these big races, like what we went through with the Senate race in Georgia, as well as the presidential race, they were able to get by and not suffer any consequence. But I think that's disappointing. But someday they're going to have to wake up and act more like Florida and some other states have and prove really that it's not crucial that you have this radical lockdown. There's more information every single day showing that it's more harmful, it doesn't help, and you can still treat coronavirus in a medical way without subjecting people to loss of liberties or exposing them to more deadly illnesses.
Indeed, and actually someone speculated on Twitter, I forget who it was today, but imagine if the GOP as a whole had been courageous enough to stand up against lockdown, to stand up in favor of civil liberties, like a Rick DeSantis did in Florida, with enormous pressure on him in the fall to go back into lockdown. He resisted. He said no. And actually, we just put up an article by Dan Horowitz on RPI today, and he points out, he dove into the numbers, and he discovers that according to hospitalizations, Florida is virtually identical this year with influenza COVID via hospitalizations as it was in the 2018 flu season. So if everyone else is right, if the lockdowners are right, Florida should be a basket case. People should be dropping in the streets.
All right.
But, you know, DeSantis was on Tucker the other night, and Tucker pointed out that, in fact, Florida is having a massive influx of people moving there. People want to go there. They want to live there, and they want to live in freedom. It's not because they want to die, right? People act in their self-interest. So if the GOP had only identified and embraced the idea that, guess what, Americans don't like losing their jobs. They don't like going insane. They don't like going back to their alcohol problems and beating up their kids. They actually want to live a normal life. If they had showed a little bit more courage in those areas, we might be singing a different tune this morning, Dr.
Well, what you just stated, I didn't watch a whole lot of television, but I watched to see what's going on and read as much as I can. But I never saw once this being the issue. They didn't even talk about it. And I think you're absolutely right. If they had to talk about it, be more precise. A lot of people, if you're precise and honest and upfront and not to fib and try to build up a magic cause for this, it's a little bit more difficult. But I'll tell you what, if people want to hear the truth, even if there's a challenge to it, but what do they do? What if they lie or distort things and it doesn't give you any real hope? You know, just like the people, it looks like, you know, if there were elections, they re-elect the mayor of New York and the state of New York. Most hopefully California will at least, you know, have a successful recall. But anyway, there's a lot of sorting out to do. I do want to move on to something else because there's a couple other things going on today. And the Electoral College is meeting, and there's lots of rumors and whispers and all kinds of proposals, you know, to stop the final stamp on the election of Biden. And not too many people are saying that, this still can be stopped and still can be stopped. Just the traditions of how things work out, that's pretty slim right now. But it's still important. I hope that the people who have objections and understand a lot about the fraudulent votes that were cast can get that information out. But so far, nobody's been arrested for committing fraud and being involved. So if there's hundreds of thousands of people doing this, somebody committed the crime. And some people use that as saying, well, there never was any fraudulent voting. No, I think it's ineptness, because how many people have been arrested for breaking windows? Black Lives Matter, do they get arrested? Call the police, come, they're breaking up my house and my building. Well, and they come over and do absolutely nothing, or they park their vehicle and walk around the block. It's just terrible what happens, because they're the ones who perpetuate this mess that we have.
We have a strange situation in the country, Dr. Paul, because a vast majority of people who voted for Trump, I mean a massive majority of people who voted for Trump, believe the election was stolen. Whether they're right or wrong, unfortunately, we'll never know, because there hasn't been a decent investigation of it. I don't understand why we're not allowed to investigate. I think if I were Biden, I would be encouraged by an investigation, because it would solidify your victory. But we have a massive amount of people who believe the election was stolen, and a significant percentage of Democrat voters. I think I saw like 17% of Democrat voters believe there was fraud going on, and also a big percentage of independent voters. So the question is, how do you square that circle? How do you govern a country where you have probably half the country at least believing that you stole the election, whether you did, or believing that the system is completely corrupt? From a libertarian perspective, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because that's an open door for us to lead with some solid policy ideas. But it really is a big question. Dr. Paul, there have been a couple competing approaches. We tend to be in favor more of Thomas Massie's approach, and he had a group behind him. And I want to go into the details of it, but essentially what Massie said is, hey, state legislatures do the election of presidents through the Electoral College. Many of these contested states are Republican-led legislatures. If they bring in competing slates, that is when Congress gets involved in the process. It doesn't get involved in the process before that, because thankfully, and David Stockman wrote about this today, we still have federalism to a degree. We still elect presidents as individual states. So it is a mess, and I honestly don't know what the answer is, Dr. Paul.
Well, one part of the answer is shrink the size of our federal government probably by 80%, and accept the notion, which is a big if, and accept the notion that the federal government there is to protect individual liberty and not do anything else, not make us safe for the world and the worldwide democracy and police the world and all these other things. But right now, the role of government is accepted by Republican and Democrat, that we have to tell people how to live and buckle over and crawl if they tell you wear a mask, even if it's not beneficial. You know, all this stuff, they've lost the desire to live as a free person. But so far, we don't have a whole lot of politicians telling it precisely what they want and what they need, because if they heard about it, he said, you know, I do want to be a free person. I like to spend my money the way that I want. I like to have my personal habit. I like to practice my religion. I think it would be a good idea if we brought our troops home. And it would be a good idea to not be involved in all these wars. People always say positive things about that, but it's so rarely offered to them. And so that's the sad part. I want to follow up too, Daniel, from the other day on Assange, it looks like Australia is getting involved. That's his home country. And if the British aren't sending him back, sending him to Washington for a fair trial, now the Australians say, hey, come back, and you're our friend, and we're going to take to you, and we'll show the world we're civil libertarians. Do you think that's about to happen?
Well, if I were Assange, knowing how the Australian government behaves as a lapdog for Washington, I wouldn't be packing my bags quite yet. And in fact, unfortunately, the news we have to report today, and some people I'm sure have seen it, is that the same judge who a couple of days ago, we talked about it on the show, denied the extradition of Assange to the Eastern District Court of the U.S., has also, unfortunately, as of yesterday, denied bail to Assange. And here's what she said, Judge Vanessa Beritzer. She said, there's substantial grounds to believe if Assange is released today, he would fail to surrender to the court to face proceedings. So even though there are no pending charges against Assange in the United Kingdom, the fact that the United States wants to appeal the denial of extradition means poor Assange has now got to stay locked in solitary confinement in Belmarsh Prison.
You know, we're supposed to get fair and speedy trials when we're charged with something. In this one, I don't even know if we have the real authority to be doing this to Assange. I don't think we do. But it's not going to be speedy. That's one thing for sure. Nothing yeah. speedy about this. And it's going to go on and on until he gets mentally ill, which would please them. And they're already reaching that thing that the poor man has suffered so much. And you torture a person for this long, something terrible does happen to it. But, you know, morally speaking, the people responsible for his well-being, you know, is guilty of a crime in a moral sense, the fact that they do this. But so much of this goes on. And just think how much torture went on. Haspel, when she was heading the CIA unit that tortured. And this is what some of these whistleblowers told us how terrible our government was treating prisoners that never committed a crime against us. And in a way, this is sort of, you know, they're treating Assange this way. He didn't commit a crime against the United States. He committed the crime of exposing the United States. I think the people who committed the crimes and wanted to cover up were the criminals, yeah. and not the ones who say, do you realize what the government says? Same thing with Ed Snowden. He was saying, oh yeah, they don't follow the rule. I know there are a lot of spy on some people, but they spy on, and he says, they spy on every American anytime they want, which turned out to be true. But he gets the punishment, not the people who disobeyed the law. So then this is a thing that should be sorted out, because the people who make the charges and who get the spotlight are the ones that do it in the name of being popular. You know, if you're patriotic, if you agree with them, and then you can't disagree. I knew a little bit about that in the campaign, that when I said some things that I thought, you know, were accurate and correct and challenging the government, he's not a patriotic person, you know, this sort of thing. So when they start saying that to somebody who's trying to tell us the truth, we should wake up.
Yeah, well, let's hope to get this appeal over quickly and give him the bail that he certainly deserves, get some fresh air and visit with his kids. We do want to move on to one other thing, Dr. Paul, before we close out, and that's just really the saber rattling on Iran. There were press reports of a mysterious audio intercept saying, we're going to crash a plane into the Capitol building to avenge the murder of Soleimani. To me, that has a little bit of a smell to it, Dr. Paul. It smells self-serving. We know there are plenty of people, Elliot Abrams and so many in the Trump administration, who are desperate as the sands tick away from the hourglass of their hold on power to somehow provoke Iran into doing something. And I suspect this latest push, this latest claim is another one of those things.
Right. You know, the other day there was a killing, and it was obvious, considered a murder. And it was, I don't know the individual, but the point I want to make, this is this murder out there, and I heard the people on the television, and they kept talking about the murder. And they say, but we don't know the motivation. We have to find the motivation, you know, of what's happening. And that was my frustration when 9/11 occurred. You weren't even allowed to ask the question, and that was my question. What was the motivation of the people who claimed they did it? You know, maybe we can learn something. Of course, that was not considered very very patriotic, and a few criticisms were thrown at me. But this thing about Soleimani and his threat out here is, okay, somebody's going to fly something into the Capitol, and it's going to be over Soleimani. Well, if it did happen, you know, are they going to say what was the motivation? They never asked the motivation of the people went into the towers, but they're not likely to ask the motivation. But it also, and I sense a little bit of reluctance on your part, Daniel, just saying we understand exactly what's going on or whether it's going to happen or not. But what about a false flag set up? Because I can just imagine what would happen after this has been sort of out in the open. Soleimani gets killed by the Americans. The Iranians are very frustrated, and they speak out, and they try to maintain dignity, and then they can paint the picture of Soleimani, who was the most evil person ever to exist in the world. And they go on and on. But the setting is just so ripe for somebody coming in. What if somebody does drop a bomb and say, well, that's payback. I'm going to kill some Americans because we don't believe you should have killed Soleimani. And by that time, the conditions we have today, there's not going to be many Republicans and not many Democrats who are going to say, oh, we better think about this. What's the motivation? Why are they killing somebody? And are they going to go into it? So I hope I'm absolutely wrong on this, that it will be used. But we should be aware of it, and we should not be readily accepting the whole idea that if a bomb is dropped and some people are killed, that it's automatic. Because there's bad guys out there and we're good guys. Bad guys don't like good guys, and that's the whole story. And don't say anything about it because you're unpatriotic if he would suggest you should look at foreign policy in its total.
Well, there certainly are a lot of people in the U.S. and certainly among our so-called allies that want nothing more than a war against Iran, and they probably view their best chance as these last few days of the Trump administration. But this is not the only thing. There have been several provocations of the past week. And that's why we wanted to bring it up on the program today. You know, the U.S. flew some B-52s over there, sent a nuclear sub. They just announced yet more sanctions today. That'll do it against Iran. So they're trying desperately to provoke Iran into taking some sort of action. But what's interesting is the fact that Iran has been restrained undermines and actually underscores the biggest lie of the neocons and warmongers, which is that we can't deal with Iran. Iran is crazy. They're not rational actors. Well, if anything, they are acting ultimately rational according to their view right now, which is that, listen, Trump is trying to get us into doing something, trying to provoke a war. We need to hunker down, sit back, don't do anything radical. Hopefully the next administration might be a little bit more sensible when it comes to this. So it shows them as rational actors, and that's what the neocons don't want you to see. But I would just say, Dr. Paul, Iran, I think, is Trump's biggest failure. You know, as Nixon went to China, Trump could have gone to Iran. He could have come away with a deal. He didn't do that. He's too beholden to the evangelicals here, to the pro-Israel lobby and others. He just simply wasn't able to do something that would have been a crowning achievement, and that will go down certainly as on the negative side of the Trump presidency.
Well, I'm sure that we will have a lot of challenges here in this next year on the foreign policy situation that's going on. You know, we were very intense on foreign policy for several years, and of course, what has been going on domestically here, we talked a lot about the virus and the lockdown here. And let's hope that gets settled down and there's not so much of a lockdown here in the United States. But I think the way you describe it, the challenges overseas are going to be there. And I think it's safe to say that Biden is not a non-interventionist. He doesn't lean libertarian. So things are going to happen. And we knew what happened when he was vice president under Obama. They were very, very aggressive. In spite of the criticisms that we can label, you know, Trump on, you know, Obama was certainly not very good on foreign policy because he was aggressive as well. But anyway, we will be keeping an eye on that closely, and we are going to still fight for the values that we have, which means that we look at what a libertarian society, a free society be like, and what it would be like if people had control of their lives, that they become owners of their own life. This makes a big difference. And you know what? That saying, that understanding is very, very popular. You talk to young teenagers, college kids, all of a sudden they understand this. Of course, they get overwhelmed by the need for compassion to reorganize the world designed to help the indigent and the poor and this sort of thing, and they buy into this propaganda. But I wished all these problems would go away, and then we could go to the beach again and sort of loaf around. But I think we're going going to stay busy, and we want to make sure our viewers know that we deeply appreciate you tuning in and giving us support. Please come back soon.